Welcome to the Jasmine Star Show, where we talk about life, business, and all the beautifully messy stuff on the in-between. Friends, I have an incredible treat for you in this episode. My guest today is Susie Moore. Now, hang on, I'm about to just give you a whole litany of why she's completely legit. But I have to say, first and foremost, she's a friend. She also happens to be a former Silicon Valley sales director turned life coach and advice columnist. She's real fancy, y'all. Her work has been featured in The Today Show, Oprah, Business Insider, Huffington Post, Forbes, Times, Marie Claire, and she's also the resident life coach columnist for The Greatest. Okay. She's legit. Now, I'm sure as if that wasn't enough, her first book, What If It Doesn't Work Out, was named by Entrepreneur as one of the 8 business books entrepreneurs must read to dominate their industry. So basically what I'm saying is Susie is a gangster. And in addition to being a total gangster, I'm lucky to call her a friend, and I can't wait to introduce her to you. In this interview, we dive into why it's why it's totally okay if people don't like you, and how to live a life where you don't need no permission. Boo boo. Okay, I know you're gonna love this interview, so let's do this. Here's my chat with Susie Moore. Susie, thank you so much for being here. I could not be more excited about this conversation. Like, we're going to start with a bang. We're going to start with getting approval. You know, it's just like the podcast of all things. It's like, let's just get to it. No beating around the bush. Like, yes. You've spent time writing a book that I think is so timely and so necessary. And here's one thing that I have to be very clear for people who are listening. Susie and I go back. We've met each other. I don't bring people on the podcast who's not like somebody I know and have a friend I want to have a real conversation with. But when you're a friend, you have to brag about your friends. So she wrote a book called Stop Checking Your Likes, which, hello, we could talk about this for days. And it's all about the side effects of seeking external approval. So is there anything besides social media that you think really has caused us to look for outside validation to determine our self-worth? Or do you really think social media is the culprit?
It's such a good question. And it's funny because I think we're very quick to blame social media, right? We're like, there wasn't a problem before social media came along. But this is a universal issue. You know, comparison's been around as long as human beings have. It's just, it's so much more public now. There's this very public modern measurement of how well you're doing, how good you look, how well you're parenting. Are you saying the right thing, eating the right thing? So this is nothing new. Just the forum has changed and it's become far bigger. So I feel that, you know, it's very natural for us to feel afraid to post, you know, feel like we're behind, feel like we're losing, because we get this window into other people's lives without understanding that it's simply not the full picture.
So what do you think social media has done to make it feel bigger? Like from your perspective?
Yeah, well, essentially it's 24/7 access to what other people are doing all the time. We can plug in. I mean, when you think about it, if you're waiting in an elevator, waiting for an elevator, you have a second, even on a conference call, if somebody's talking too long, we're just always scrolling. It's this scroll hole. It's this constant default mode, muscle memory that we have. And so what's easier than just, you know, checking your phone, checking your likes? It's so easy. It's you know, often expected. We're expected to always be responding and reacting to other people's posts too. So I just think that the access and the fact that this is just kind of how our lives have become, with the average American being on their phone, on social media specifically, for what, 2 hours a day now? There's a lot you could be doing in 2 hours a day, Jasmine, as you know.
Yeah.
And when you have a life change often, like, you know, becoming a mom, I think often these life changes help us too.
Okay, so I love this. Now, I should probably back up and let people know that our paths intersected, and I knew you as basically like the pitch it queen. Like, yeah. You empower people to really get a message out, and you talk about press and you talk about publicity, but it's really positioned you in a really unique perspective to see both sides of the perspective. What it means to be frontward facing, pushing your business on the outside, and then what it means to be unattached to the approval. And from your perspective of where we are now, can you share us your origin story? Like, how did we get here? Because that'll give us insight into why the book is so pertinent and a passion project of yours.
Yes, absolutely. So I started out, you know, my business as a life coach a few years ago, and I wanted to have people find me. I knew that there was going to be an easier way than hustling, you know, always, you know, spending to attract people. And once I understood the power of the media, how huge it is, how the media wants regular voices, just like, you know, yours and mine, I started just using it again and again and again. And the way that I knew that I could attract the right people to me would be to be telling my stories. And so I wrote about my dad dying when I was young, about being married to an addict, being divorced when I was young, growing up on welfare. I was just sharing truths about myself. And then my opinion and my interpretation of those stories as an adult who has power and responsibility over my life. And it was funny because the more I put content out there, I got a lot of support, but then I also got a lot of hate. Like, if you're a woman who's happily divorced, then a lot of people don't like that. That's one example. And I would get, there's actually a page in my book where I actually just list some of the insults I've been given. I mean, I don't want to say anything too mean on your lovely podcast, but.
I mean, no. I mean, if we talk, but here's the thing though, if we talk about not getting likes, if we're not looking for approval, Susie, say your truth, girl, say your truth and feel the tea. Absolutely. And then we can bleep it out if we don't like it. So there you go. Be you.
Okay, fantastic. So someone said that I look like a man. Somebody said that I'm a gold digging poor. Someone says that my husband's a pussy. What else? What other gems are in there, Jasmine? Like, what else can I say? And I don't give any context. I just share like the comments that I've received. When people, like, they don't know you. They don't even read your story. They just often see your headline. And it's funny because in the beginning, I was like, oh, I'm doing something wrong. I'm not explaining myself clearly, or maybe I'm just putting myself out there and that's, you know, not wise of me. But, you know, intuitively, I realized that the thing that I needed to stop doing wasn't sharing the stuff that I know to be true. It was my thinking around the responses that I was getting. And even though it's a minority, it still does hurt. But I've just learned it's become such a practice of mine to put everything into perspective for me to understand that nothing is about me. Despite what anyone says, good or bad, we're all just confirming our own biases all of the time. And all I can do is just follow my path and do what feels intuitively right for me. And I can't change my behavior based on feedback.
Okay, so can we tap here for 1 second?
Oh, yeah.
I want to discuss the mindset shift, because when you were receiving the negative, so here's the truth, that you're getting negative feedback then and you're still getting it today. So what happened to the mindset? Like, what was Susie's mindset of you're like, I must be doing something wrong, to the mindset now that you're an empowered author teaching people to remain unattached?
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought to myself, if this weren't me, right? If it was somebody else. So for example, when I wrote about being divorced, I had, people write to me saying, I'm married to an addict. You know, I don't know if he's going to change. And I mean, look, I don't give advice because, you know, it's not my decision what people do, but I can just share what's been true for me and some things that I believe to be true. And so it's incredible, like the power that we have, if we're willing to be, if we have the courage to keep going. And Jasmine, this is what real confidence is. I think we really understand, you know, misunderstand it. We think that confidence is, you know, being really extroverted and a really great, you know, chatty dinner party mm-hmm. guest who dominates the conversation, or someone who's always winning with all the likes. But real confidence is being able to experience negative emotion, hold it in your body, and keep going.
Like, okay. No. We need to repeat that. We need, because that's, so tell me again. Repeat that exact thing.
Yeah. So probably your opinion of confidence, or just how you just naturally think of it, the images that come to your mind of a confident person, they're often just off. They're not accurate. A confident person is simply willing to be themselves, do the things that feel right to them, even though some negative feedback or criticism will happen, being okay with it and knowing that the negative emotions you experience are temporary, they will pass, and moving forward in your truth anyway.
So a confident person can sit with negative emotions
yes.
and have it not affect them.
Yes.
Ugh.
Have it not detour them, get them rolling, get them, you know, changing everything up, but being like, you know, okay, well, this is uncomfortable. I admit that I'm human. It doesn't feel good to be criticized, but you know, I'm just going to hold this. It's how I feel. I'll bounce back. And that's one thing that I think only experience teaches you, like the bounce back rate is kind of up to you, like how long you're going to be there.
Okay, so speaking of the bounce back rate, I have to say, one of my favorite chapters in the book is titled, "No One Else Knows What They're Doing Either." Yes and amen. And I think that to entrepreneurs who are listening, this fact is like really comforting, because you could think like people like Oprah, Ellen, Beyonce, like they totally have their lives together. And then here we are on like the struggle bus, like they don't know what we go through. Now, you had a really great exercise to combat this. So I would love for you to talk about the hero inventory.
Yes. So I think when it comes to, you know, nobody knows what they're doing either. If you have any successful friends, or if you read any autobiographies, you understand that we're all just like kind of doing our best with that confidence, right? Knowing that, oh, if I fail, if I mess up, it's okay. It's going to be uncomfortable. But what's, you know, what's the most important thing here? It's, you know, keeping going as you, as who you are. And one thing that, you know, I think we feel, and what we, you know, what we get wrong is we think that the people who we look up to and the people who succeed is they know something we don't, they're smarter than us, they have access to stuff that we don't have access to, and they're simply more special or allowed or entitled to have these wins. And it's just not true. I mean, as you know, Jasmine, as a successful woman, there are a lot of failures that you've had, a lot of times that, you know, things haven't gone your way. I'm sure you've had a lot of disappointments, right? I'm sure that there.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm like, do I just jump in? Because I was like, where, like, I could literally have a laundry list of those things. And just to co-sign before we actually get into the hero inventory, it's when I resisted admitting the discomfort, and when I resisted admitting the truth, and when I tried hiding something I didn't want to talk about, it unearthed in really ugly ways and like revealed like the fissures in my foundation. And it's so empowering to completely own a mistake, own a failure, and really step into the lessons that was learned. And people appreciate that. And it's just such a real thing. So thank you for speaking up for that. And I'm just like, yo, learn from my mistakes. Okay. Yes. So we tell ourselves that these other people have things and have access in a way that we don't. How are we combating this?
But what we need to understand is, you know, first of all, we grossly overestimate everybody else. And I swear we're all doing this with at least one or two people in our lives when we don't know their story. Like, we don't know. You might see somebody and be like, she has it all together. You don't know if she speaks to her parents, if she's struggling with credit card debt, if she's having fertility issues, if someone that she loves is really sick. Like, we don't know anything. Like, for perspective, I mean, we see what 5 or 10% of someone's real life online, or really anywhere. Even if you see someone in real life and you just don't spend that much time with them or know them intimately, there's very little that we understand. And so sometimes it shocks people when I say, oh, I'm rejected all the time. Like, so right now I'm in, of course, in my book promotion mode, I'm pitching, I'm getting a lot of silence and a lot of rejections, and I'm very open about it. And people are so surprised. They're like, but why would you get rejected? You've been here and there, and it should be easy for you. And I don't think it should be easy for me or easy for anybody, right? It's a level playing field out there. We all just get to be part of the game, right? Part of the process, and be making our contributions. But in my experience, the reason I do have wins is because for every win, there's probably like 20 non-wins that no one sees because they never came to fruition, but I tried.
I love that ratio. I love, like, for every 20 non-wins, I finally get a win. And so often people quit or stop after the first or second, you know, declination. They stop after somebody says no, and they never give themselves the opportunity to get 20 no's or 100 no's. And I want to go back to something that you had said, is like, oftentimes people have like an opinion about the 5 or 10% that they know. And I have always maintained that people will have 100% opinion about the 1% of my life that I show it on social media. And I just have decided that, like, if you want to have an opinion and be extraordinarily negative, well, there's 99% of me you know nothing about. And to the, you know, small group of people who my life truly matters to and truly knows, like, those are the people whose opinions matter to me the most. So thank you for speaking up in that regard. So,
and I would love to ask you too, Jasmine, if I may, because so if somebody says to me, oh, I never get criticism, or I never get, you know, rejection, or I just think they must be brand new to whatever it is that they're doing, because
I'm actually going to say something that's more offensive. I'm going to say something. Yeah.
I want to hear.
I mean, that's what this podcast is about. Not only do I think you're new, because if you're not new, you're probably not very good at what you do. Like if you're not getting criticized, you're not speaking up enough, you're not making a bold enough statement. The world is tired of vanilla. They want your special, unique blend of ice cream, and your unique blend of ice cream is not going to be for everybody. So for everybody who says, I hate the flavor of butter pecan rican, fine. That's, you're not going to be like my person. But for the people who really enjoy the flavor, they are the first in line. They drive farther. They attest to you. They become a small little tiny tribe of people. And I firmly believe that your life, your business, your ethic, like who you are will go farther with 10 people who genuinely believe in your message than trying to get 10,000 people to be like really interested in what it is. Like you care about them. They're the people that are going to take you to the next level.
I completely agree. And I feel like this is where we need to trust our intuition. Wouldn't you agree, like Jasmine? Because we can take a little piece of everyone who we admire and we can mold ourselves. I think we do this a lot unconsciously. And I mean, it starts very early with our parents, right? It's, you know, what their beliefs are.
And that's the first chapter of your book. You start with parents. You start with parents. And I thought it was a great place to start. So let's tap there a little bit.
Yeah, so my first chapter is called Your Parents F You Up, Go For It Anyway, right? And it's not like your parents are bad. I mean, they had parents too. It didn't start with them, whatever it is that we're learning, but no parent or human is perfect. And I mean, I inherited some beliefs that weren't helpful for me that I had to question, right? Which happens when you do the work. And, you know, one belief I had from my mom was that rich people are crooks. Right, because we had nothing, you know, and the one rich lady we knew, she was my dad's mistress. And she was like the evil, evil person in the world for us. And so she's like, see, money, that's what money does. And I'm like, because I was always around my dad's drug dealing friends and a lot of them didn't have any money. And I'm like, they're crooks too. Like poor people can be crooks too. Like even like as a teenager, I could interpret that information, you know, but that was a belief that I think, you know, in our family, some people still have it. And so it's, Esther, if there's one thing that you do in, you know, in your life, like wherever you're at, it's never too late to just question some of the beliefs that just seem like fact to you, because very little is fact. I think actually everything is an interpretation, like everything is a perspective. And sometimes your beliefs help you and that's great. But in a lot of cases, like there's probably at least one or two that we hold on to unknowingly, like this is how someone should behave if, or good people don't do that. Or it's always a mistake if. And this is something that, you know, if you ever work with a coach or do a lot of the inner work, you realize where your limitations are and you kind of see what's not working.
Okay, so I have to stop here because I have a question. So people who are listening, I'd love to do an exercise. I love when we do something active on the podcast. So the exercise could be, what is something that you have held as a commonly held belief that if you were to take a step back, you think to yourself, is that true? And if it is, so let's just start there. So you say, Jasmine, pick a commonly held belief. And then what is the work after that for me to determine, like what exercise, what steps do I do to actually challenge that as a belief?
Oh, yeah, it's such a good question. So I would see in whatever area of your life, are you not quite satisfied? Right, we always have typically at least one to two areas where we're not feeling fulfilled or we feel like we know this area could be better. So for example, I mean, let's just say it's, you know, relationships. And you're like, okay, well, men can't be trusted, right? Maybe that's a belief that you inherited because your parents are divorced and it's something that you just, you know, you hold in your body. So first of all, it's like, okay, where did that thought come from, right? How long have I been believing it? Give yourself some self-compassion here, right? It's not like, well, I know it now, I've got to fix it. I've been wrong and I've been messing myself up. It's like, you know what? The best self-help is self-compassion. And so if you can like question your belief, not judge it, right? But just say, okay, what is it? You know, having some curiosity around it and then see, okay, the area that you're not quite happy with, questioning what thoughts you might have around it. Sometimes you can just say, what do I believe about relationships on the top of your journal? And then just write it down. I did this with somebody once and she was like, relationships are financial risk, opportunity to be hurt, opportunity for abandonment. And she didn't know that those were her feelings until she like kind of did this exercise.
So let's do this real quick. Let's do this exercise for business owners. Since the majority of this audience, like one, I'm like a huge proponent of building your business, leveraging the power of social media. And I also want to tether it with the belief that you and I are 100% on the same page when it comes to stop checking your likes. Like I've been saying that since the beginning. So that's good. So if we were to contextualize this, like what are the beliefs I have around starting my business? That's what I want people to write down on a piece of paper. And I want you to truly understand the underlying emotions. It's risky. You do it alone. You failed before.
People
or
judge you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So once people look at the emotions or thoughts that they have associated with this commonly held belief of starting your business, you as a life coach, what then would be the next step?
You start looking for evidence on the contrary. So if someone says, you know, starting a business is risky, right? Okay, let's start with that. Okay, is that a fact? Right? Is it a fact that starting a business is risky? Is it a fact that having a job is risky? Like a regular job, like, is that risky? Do you know anybody who has a business where they feel quite steady in their business? Right? There are examples all around us, but we find evidence, our brains will find evidence to support our beliefs anywhere. So if we're like finding, you know, starting a business is risky, we'll those statistics will pop out at us. We'll tune into the conversations, you know, where things aren't going well for somebody. I mean, we're always looking for evidence to almost reject ourselves. Before the world can reject us, like, we're just looking for evidence, like, to support our beliefs. It's how our brain works in terms of just, you know, the circuitry. We want loops and repeat thoughts. So this takes some work and it takes some courage. And not everybody's willing to do this. So you want to find evidence to the contrary. And then,
I feel like that was really deep and I wanted to pause there because we look for evidence to reject mm-hmm. ourselves. Yes. And I think I would take it one step further is like people say, no, Jasmine, I'm not rejecting myself. I'm going to modify and say we look for evidence to reject our dreams mm-hmm. and to reject our ambitions because you want to talk yourself out of it so that you don't give yourself the chance to quote unquote fail. But like Susie had mentioned, is like if the exercise is to list all the thoughts and ideas that are associated with starting a business and then you were to find evidence otherwise that you do know successful entrepreneurs or you know the fact that you could, there is somebody else in the world doing what you are doing and they're doing it and it's lucrative and they're successful and they're happy, that if then you started mapping your belief to that, how then would that change your perspective? Like how then would you find evidence not to, you know, shortchange your dream, but to actually build upon it? So I wanted to pause there and let that gravity sit in. So Susie, thank you for that. Now we've gone through the stories we tell ourselves. Mm-hmm. We found evidence. We're giving our chance to not shortchange our dreams. Mm-hmm. Then what? Like, what's the practical step?
This takes some courage, right? So understanding that your beliefs are just thoughts that have been on loop for a very long time. And just the way the beliefs are created, they're destroyed the same way, right? Through the mind. So this is something that I like to do. Again, it takes courage, but it's flipping the cause and effect. So in traditional psychology, there's a cause and effect. So, you know, my husband doesn't want me to start a business, which is why I can't start a business, right? So there's, you know, a problem and then, you know, a limitation. And so the question is, can we flip it for a second? Can we have the courage to flip that? So instead of saying, my husband doesn't want me to start a business, so I can't, saying, I don't have the courage right now to start a business, so I'm going to blame my husband.
Oh, yeah.
And it's confrontational sometimes, right? But if you're willing to ask yourself that question, any excuse, even a good excuse, is an excuse.
And so what if somebody says, okay, so help me flip this. Like, I want to just throw something out. Like somebody says, I don't have money to start my business.
Well, you don't want to start your business or you haven't got the courage right now. So it's proving true for you that you have no money, right? Or the money that you have, you won't give access to for your business because it's not safe for you to do that. So let's have that sweet little excuse, which people understand and they won't judge you because, you know, if you haven't got money, then people can't be mean about that. So it's like, okay, you don't want to start your business yet. Or you don't feel ready yet. So we're going to keep saying you don't have any money. Is that a fact?
Oh, no, it's a crutch.
Yes.
Oh, we're just coming out. Like, here's the thing, Susie. We've put a line in the sand and like half the people listening love us and half the people listening are just up in arms. Like, you don't understand mm-hmm. my situation. You know this, but like I have said, like I would never make a big, bold, sweeping statement if I had never been in the exact same situation. Mm-hmm. Like not having money is the same situation, but how two different people look at that same situation defines who actually goes out and does the thing that they want to do. So
exactly.
Thank you for just breaking that down. Thank you.
Yeah. May I just share one more thing too on this. If there's a cause and effect, and you know, sometimes it can feel really real, like I don't have the money or my husband doesn't want me to, then that would then be true for everybody, right? If that were a fact, then anybody who hasn't had money or an unsupportive spouse, then that would have to be true for them. So it's you. Like, this is where the freedom is. It's where the confrontational feelings, you know, start. But this is where your freedom is. Like, it is your, like, isn't that wonderful, Jasmine? Like, you have so much control over your life. Not over everything, especially, you know, look at the time right now. But right. I even see in my, you know, quarantine, you know, apartment, I've got so much control over what I do at this time right now.
Absolutely.
I'm powerful in here.
So yes, be careful of a woman who's locked in an apartment with the internet. She might just change the world.
I mean, you can do anything. I know.
You literally can. And speaking of doing everything and anything, you've been successful in multiple iterations of your life. And we talked a little bit about your origin story. We've talked about the pivots you've made. We've talked about the reinvention of yourself. And like on the outside, I'm just saying as a friend, it looks pretty flawless. I know everything, I know. We know how it goes. You know that like everything looks shiny on social media. But like, talk to me about what did you have like a lightning bolt moment, or was it like a slow roll to like writing the book? Like, it seems like a big sweeping statement, like stop checking your likes. That's a very big culturally relevant title and like a big sweeping statement. That's the antithesis of what a lot of people are doing. How did the idea for the book come up?
I think that, you know, working as a coach, helping people in various areas of their lives for years now, and also having read so much self-help, like Jasmine, I've written about this, you know, I read 500 self-help books. Here's what I know. Like, here's what I learned, but good lessons distilled. I feel like I've invested a lot in understanding what is holding people, what holds people back, and what allows some people to not be held back. And again, so much of this is just, you know, our own responsibility. Mm-hmm. But I felt like, you know, one thing that I realized, which just became more and more common and then almost funny, right? You know, something is like, just, it's so true, and but it's so unconscious, you kind of like almost have to laugh. I realized that whenever there's a failure, a perceived failure, whatever that may be, like a relationship, often starting a business is such a big one. It's not the failure that kills us, right? As human beings, we are resilient. It's proven historically what we can endure. But the failure, you know, we can withstand that. But what scares us the most is what other people are going to say about that failure.
Yes.
You know, it's like, if I lost all of my money, I'd be okay. You know, within me, I know that I could create again. But then I'd be like, oh my gosh, everyone would be like, oh my God, she was always fake. She was always up to, you know, she never had any talent. Like, it's the things that, like, the expectation of how we're going to be judged that keeps us, like, that keeps us hidden, keeps us safe, keeps us really not moving forward. And I feel as if you can lose some of the fear of external influences and understand too that no one's paying attention to you, Jasmine, right? Like, everyone's just trying to like pay the visa bill, not burn the chicken, like make it through the week, right? Like, we're all just doing our best. No one's sitting there focusing on you and your launch and your numbers and your books. Like, everyone's just busy doing them, right? Then you're kind of building up this whole story in your head about, number one, something that isn't happening. And then number two, you're creating this prison around yourself when you're completely free to be doing all the things. And all the things, no matter the outcome, negative, being a confident person, you'll survive it. So it's like we're coming up with all these stories and reasons to not move forward. And it's like we're standing in this place of massive opportunity, like to be alive right now. So it's kind of the limitations we give ourselves, just these perspectives, this illusion of, you know, things being scary. I really wanted to debunk a lot of that.
Oh, I love it. And when I think about this, and I just love your voice and I love your perspective and I love how you're distilling a lot of like big ideas, and you're basically distilling 500 plus books into like one book. So oftentimes when I coach business owners, we think about like their dream customer. We build out who this person is, what are their struggles and all these things. Like, as you were writing the book, did you have a person you were writing it for? Like, who was this person and what was he or she going through? And what, every time that you like, you had to sit in front of your keyboard and the days were long and you didn't want to write, and the date, you know, you sat in traffic and like nothing's going well and you burnt the chicken. Like, who is that person? Like, who are you saying, like, you're my person? Who is that person?
I love this question because you're the master at this. Like, I've heard you speak about it, and my gosh, I love it. I remember when I heard you speak in LA once, I left with all these notes, like, oh my gosh, yes, like I'm listening to you. I feel that with me, with my stories, because I tend to open each chapter with a story, I was thinking about someone who might have experienced shame or embarrassment or rejection, those kind of ugly feelings that we love to skip over or hide away or pretend that we don't have, and think about the people who rather than one person, just knowing that whatever you've gone through, you're not the first person who's gone through it. And you certainly won't be the last. But kind of understanding that I'm speaking to somebody who's going to go through something like this, or who won't let themselves go through something like this because they're too scared that something like this will happen. So I wanted to be the example of, you know, being the person who has failed a lot, made a lot of mistakes, has a lot of shame, or had a lot of shame around my, you know, childhood, but still being okay and kind of having a sense of humor about it. Too, because
which is very English, which is very like upper lip, stiff upper lip, but very, very humorous. Yes.
Well, I feel like, I mean, at the end of it all, aren't we taking it all a bit too seriously? Mm. I mean, there are some things that are serious, yes, and they require our attention, but I don't know. Most things, I don't know. I think we could be a bit lighter about. And I say in the book, you know, at some point that, you know, we're all told, like, you know, hustle, grind, you know. Work till your eyes bleed. We have a 9 to 5. What's your 5 to 9? Like, I get it. And look, I'm a hard worker. I'm into it. But I also feel that when we have all these stresses and expectations, that we've really cut ourselves off from our creativity and we don't allow things, good things to flow to us. And I think that sometimes if you look back at your life, and look, we all have a history with the universe, you know, some of the best things that have happened to us have come to us. Right.
So this book is really about empowering people to talk and deal and address and face on very, very common emotions. Mm-hmm. Shame, embarrassment, doubt, which I think is great. Now, for somebody who's a headline reader and they just read the title of your book and you see on the internet that somebody says, oh, that's Susie Moore girl. She just doesn't like social media. She thinks social media is bad. How would you respond to that?
Oh, I love social media just like anybody else. I feel like it's really helpful. I feel like I'm so grateful to be alive at this time, to have all these tools that are free and available. But I think that there's a distinction, right? I mean, as you always speak so eloquently about, like, there's the creative part, right? There's the you that comes out. And I mean, I've been asked a lot about, you know, Instagram changing their likes, etc. And I think I don't even really have a firm view on it because I don't really care. But I think, you know, the most important thing is to share what feels real to you and to do that. And to do that, you know, knowing that not everyone's going to agree with you, and that's cool. So that part is great, right? But we just give so much emphasis to part two, which is like the response, right? Like, do people like it? Do people like me? Do I look cute? Like, what is everybody saying? So I think, you know, part one, like sharing and being useful and making this contribution, this juicy contribution, is wonderful. But it's when it's overshadowed by part two and then dictated to by part two, where we completely then just abdicate ourselves. We're just, you know, out there to please others, where we're kind of missing not just the point of social media, but just also our entire life.
Mm. So when I think about the people who are going to read this book, and when I think about the things that they'll say and what they'll walk away from, is like, for somebody who's on the precipice of maybe this is the book for me, maybe it's not for the book for me, for somebody who is desperate, like, Susie, I don't know how to not desire people's approval. Like, what do you say to that person? How does a person who's desperate, in dire desperation of getting approval, what would you tell them? You're going down an elevator, you're on like a quick subway ride. I know you're not in New York anymore. You're in beautiful Miami, but
yes.
I'm on the subway with you and I'm my next stop. Like, how do you help me not be attached to the approval?
First of all, I would say that probably you'll never be completely free, right? We're all, again, human. And unless you're maybe Eckhart Tolle, who's lost his ego, he says, we're all going to be in this, you know, kind of game where it's nice to get good feedback and it's nice to be wanted and approved of. But the one thing that I will say, which I think is probably like the foundation of this book and just the foundation of truth, is the fact that your worthiness, like as a human, is fixed. It's undeletable, and there's nothing that you can do about it. Like, there's nothing you can do about that. No matter how many mistakes you make, no matter how much you feel you've like messed up your life or you're doing it wrong. I mean, one example that I give, which I think just makes it clear, is like, just say, Jasmine, you know, you're out with your friends, you're hiking somewhere, like a bunch of you, and you get lost, right? They lose you. Are they going to be like, yeah, but is she verified? Should we get a rescue team? Is there like a...
Does she have a blue check?
Does she do her taxes properly? Like, you know, there will be a rescue team for you, right? Because, you know, on one level, we see things clearly, but it's everything else we're telling ourselves internally and struggling with that isn't true, right? These kind of fiction statements that we have about ourselves. So I would say, regardless of your likes, regardless of, you know, people liking you or not liking you, and that's all, again, very temporary, you can't predict it. Knowing that, like, the core of this, like the law, the truth, this permanent, unshakable foundation is that your life, you're worthy, and there's nothing you could do about it. Like, if there's a $100 bill in the street and it's brand new, cute, nice having a crisp bill. But if it was, like, you know, stomped on in the wash, whatever it is, it's still worth the exact same. And so I think that once you understand that even a little bit more, you find this steadiness that isn't only completely just relaxing, it can give you this euphoria almost. But ironically, you then start attracting a lot of people and opportunities to you because you don't need them. Like, you're just in this place of knowing who you are.
Okay, so there's just like a lot to unpack here, and I'm sitting here with my brow furrowed, and I'm just like, I need to like press apart my brows. I need to like literally need to peel back my forehead, because there's so much here. It's like our worthiness, you had said, was undeletable. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it was such a nice word to use specifically as we close the conversation, but it's undeletable. And I would say it's uneditable, and you cannot add a filter and you cannot add a GIF. Like, your worth is the same as mine, yours, hers, and his. And you had said the analogy of the $100 bill. Some people really only want a crumbled $100 bill. And for those people who love the softness of it and the brokenness of it and the caresses of it and the stories that it tells and the places it's been and the hands that it's touched, that $100 bill means more to them. It's not worth any more to them. Thank you for driving that home. You are just a brilliant source of radiant light, and your book is going to smash, and it is a gift. So thank you for writing it to thousands and hundreds of thousands of people who will read it. How can they find your book?
You can get it on stopcheckingyourlikes.com for a special bonus too before the end of April, and it's also everywhere books are sold.
Because you're fancy like that. Of course, it's everywhere books are sold. Stop Checking Your Likes by Susie Moore. And how can we find you on social, and you will be unattached to whether or not we like your post?
You cannot like me, and I will still like you back. I'm just at Susie.Moore. That's it.
You are a gem. Thank you, friend, for being here. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Jasmine. Right back at you. Mwah. Mwah.
Isn't Susie just the sweetest, smartest, most fun, kind, okay, I'm going to stop because this is getting awkward with my love affair with this woman? She is a fantastic friend and a sweet soul. You can grab Susie's book, Stop Checking Your Likes, Shake Off the Need for Approval, and Live an Incredible Life, wherever books are sold. And it would mean the world to me if you shared this episode on your Instagram story to let us know what you thought of the interview. Y'all know Instagram stories are my love language. I love them almost as much as I love connecting with you. Thank you for listening to the Jasmine Star Show, and I hope to see you back here next time.